Welcome back to the Personal Finance Show. It sounds a bit odd to say that, Des, after having said the Business Economic Show for so long. The Business Economic Show will still continue on a Thursday night, but thanks to Liron for setting the foundation for me, and I'll be taking the show going forward for the next couple of months, and we'll see how it goes from there. In studio with me, I have Sean Fleischek, who's a tax practitioner. Don't know why I bumbled when I said that. Jason, just before you go, you said CAR and my blood ran cold because I came from Sage, and that was one thing that we kept looking at, was our capital adequacy ratio in the final days of Sage, where it was, I think it was still, the rigor mortis had started setting in before Momentum bought it, and the capital adequacy ratio showed that the company was really, really healthy, and it had the adequacy, it just didn't have the legs to keep going. The cash flow on the running business side had dried up.
Yeah, but I think the key thing to realize when it came to Sage is Sage in itself as a business for the existing business was a solid business.
Absolutely.
And that's what the CAR ratio showed.
Yes.
And that's why Momentum took over the business. The issue would have come with new business, and that's why Sage stopped to new business. So the CAR ratio in that case showed what had the statutory actually done. He had accurately depicted the existing business. And
Correct.
That's why Momentum in the end did pay a lot of money for Sage. The key came with, first of all, offshore policies that Sage had written that were drawing on the local business. The local business was 100% sound and 100% ring-fenced. So it's another indicator to everybody to understand the true strength of life insurance in South Africa. You take a look at all the disasters that have happened with regard to investments in South Africa. It's never involved a life insurer.
Absolutely.
And that, in the end, is the key thing. I'm a big believer in life insurance in South Africa and life insurance associated products. And people need to understand how they're protected in a life insurance product versus an alternate product.
Fantastic. Thanks for your time, Jason Sharp. I said there without a bumble.
Cheers, thanks.
Great. And if you'll give me a buzz tomorrow, I'd like to speak to you a bit further. Right, Sean, how are you doing?
Well, and you, Avi?
Good, good. Welcome to Chai FM. I know it's been a bit of a hybrid show, but thanks to Ron Mazur for hosting the beginning. Sean, let's get straight into it. Tax season is nearly upon us. And really what I want to do in this show is, everybody's listening, please take out a pen and paper, or take out your iPad, or get ready with your thumbs on your cell phone. Because what we're going to do today is give you a step-by-step idiot's guide to get yourself ready for tax. Tax season is going to open up in about 2-4 weeks' time. What does somebody have to have ready before they start, before they sit down in front of e-filing? What should be in front of them neat and tidy?
Basically, all income and expenses.
Right.
All right. You start off firstly with your RP5 or IT3A.
What's the difference between the two?
One is where tax has been deducted from any income that you've earned from an employer.
Right.
And the other is where you've earned an income from an employer, but tax hasn't been deducted from.
Right, and therefore you owe the receiver all that tax.
Well, that just gives you a receipt. It's essentially a receipt from
Correct.
The employer to basically say, I have paid you X amount of income.
Correct, okay.
Whether it's taxed or not taxed is a different issue. Thereafter, retirement annuity certificates.
Right.
Income protection policies.
Correct.
Which are deductible.
For the meantime, there is talk. Pravin Gordhan, the Minister of Finance, did say he's looking at scrapping that in the next budget, but that's still out, I reckon.
Well, when you say next budget, you'll find things that when Pravin Gordhan mentions something, it may take 3, 4, 5 years to actually come into effect.
I like the five idea. The longer the better. Keep
Definitely.
It going.
Thereafter, medical expenses.
Okay. Right. Now, let's just delve on that for a moment, because in medical expenses, let's just break it down. Your medical aid premium is a medical expense.
Correct.
Right. You don't get the actual premium that you pay as a discount. What happens is per member, whether it's yourself, your spouse, and your children, the receiver gives you a tax credit.
Correct.
Great. And that's a set amount.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Then everything that the medical aid didn't cover. So all those embarrassing times when you've got to the counter and you said, charge it to the medical aid, and they've come back to you and said to you, your medical savings account is depleted, or they are not paying, or there's a levy. All that is stuff that the medical aid isn't paying and you need to have together with you when you start doing your tax.
I think that's the vital thing you've mentioned, is all those little things. People will often purely rely on their medical contribution certificate.
Right.
And it may be small amounts during the year every time you go. I mean, look at a family of four. You go to the doctor.
Sean, this is a Jewish radio station.
Okay, family of 10. All right. You got a family of, say, average four people.
Right.
The amount of levies that you could pay during a year could easily amount to thousands of rands.
Correct.
And you need to keep those expenses because dependent on your income will depend on your threshold. If you're below 65, you have a threshold you have to exceed before you can deduct expenses.
Correct.
Right. If you can't build up to that threshold, you're not going to be able to deduct anything.
But don't give up right away. Keep all those slips.
Keep it. You never know.
100%. And I might be wrong, but I think that every time you do a transaction at a proper pharmacy and there is a rejection because there's no savings or you have to pay a levy, that is all recorded actually by the medical aid and it does come on your medical aid slip. Or a certificate at least.
It will, but SARS has a policy of, because on your medical contribution certificate, you'll have your contributions paid, and then usually you have a nice little insidious little amount at the bottom of claims not paid.
Correct.
By the fund. SARS's opinion is that that does not prove that you have paid it.
Oh, good point. It just means that they had the medical aid.
It just means
hasn't
that the
it.
Medical aid has
right.
not paid that amount. You, on the other hand, as the taxpayer, have to prove that you have paid it. So that's why you need to keep all those nasty little slips from the chemist. Keep them, rack them all up, and see what comes to at the end of the year.
Okay, so it's the stuff from your employer RP5 or the RT3. It is your pension fund contributions, which most probably would be inside your IRP5.
Yes, pension and provident will be reflected on your
IRP5. Your medical aid. Then, if you're self-employed, what else can you put into that?
There's a number of these. Let's just deal with firstly your commission earners.
Okay.
And they're not quite self-employed, but they're earning an income with their extra deductions that they can claim. Okay. You get on commission earners, you've got home office expenses, right,
okay.
that you can calculate.
Let's just talk about that for a second. If you don't work from home, you don't have a home office. It's as simple as that. The fact that you have a study doesn't mean it's a home office.
Correct. If your employer provides you with a place of work,
right,
you theoretically don't have a place, a home office.
Correct.
But for instance, say you've got a salesperson who doesn't really have an office. He doesn't get to, he may go into his employer's premises once or twice a week, but he's out on the road for the majority of the day. And when he comes back home, he's got admin to do, quotes to prepare and that, and he works in a dedicated space. In his home that is dedicated for doing that work, he's entitled to claim that.
Isn't it possible to have two offices? I've got an office at Momentum, but I also have a home office. Tomorrow I've got an appointment that starts at our parents' home. Let's say, no, our parents' home at 11 o'clock. I'm not going to go to Sandton and then come back to Oaklands. I'm simply going to stay at home and work from my home office.
Correct. In that situation, yes, provided you're using it specifically for
correct
work.
Okay, so it's the home office expenses. What goes together with that? Can the housekeeper, the garden service, repairs to the property, the percentage of your home office as
those,
a general space?
Yes, those have to be. You've got certain expenses that may be directly attributed and others that have to be apportioned. For instance, your security. Right, if your security premium, it has to be apportioned to the proportion of floor space used specifically for the home office versus
right.
the entire space.
Okay.
Other expenses, for instance, you put up shelving in that office. That shelving is 100% deductible
okay.
because it's only in that office.
Okay, great. And then another thing where you and I, you burst my bubble about 2 years ago, is I had just spent a whole lot of money on academia and I'd studied and I'd spent money on textbooks. And you looked at me and said to me, well, that's very nice of you. Well done for furthering your education and becoming cleverer and brighter and more arrogant. But you can't use that as a deduction. Is that correct?
Correct.
So education doesn't come into it, even though if it's solely for your purpose of enhancing your business, whatever it is.
Yep.
Right. So you sit down, you've got all those things. I'll be blunt and honest, I've never done a tax return on my own, or at least not for many, many years. I don't even know what an e-file looks like. Is it straightforward? Can the person sit down and do it themselves if they have all the ducks in their row? Or from the outset, should they go to a tax practitioner?
Two things. Yes, you can always do your own tax return. The whole question comes into play as to whether you know whether your assessment has been done correctly or not.
Okay, what is an assessment? Is that right. Once I've submitted it, I've hit the green button and said go, then some gremlin comes back in there and says to me, we've looked at everything and please deposit R500,000 in SARS bank account.
Correct. You'll okay. get an assessment back after submitting your return, and it will say either you owe SARS X amount of money or SARS has to refund you. Now, determining the quantum of that is what makes the difference between the layman and a good tax practitioner.
But doesn't e-filing take care of all that? If I put all the information in correctly and honestly and I hit the green button, I should assume that what SARS comes back to me with as an assessment is correct.
No. It doesn't always happen like that. It should. It's supposed to. But also, certain sections of the Income Tax Act are not hard and fast.
Right.
They're subject to interpretation, and they have to be evaluated by a human being. Your simple tax returns, where it's just a salary and a tax payment on an RP5, will 95% of the time come back as correctly assessed. You start adding in certain things like medical deductions, commission earners, where you've got expenses to be deducted, rental income. If you've earned rental income, you've got certain deductions there. And now the soup pot tends to get a bit thicker.
Right.
Okay. And when you get that assessment back, it's knowing whether it is correctly calculated or not correctly calculated that makes the biggest difference.
And being able to go back to SARS and say, I have an objection based on A, B, and C, not you, because I don't like the figure at the bottom.
Correct.
Great.
And there's also silly little things. Like you can, about 3 years ago, there was an error on the SARS system. And
with RP5s?
With tax returns, with filing of tax returns. The system has its built-in mandatory field. In other words, you cannot submit your tax return without filling in certain mandatory fields. You complete those mandatory fields and you hit the submit button and you get this assessment back. And most, funnily enough, a lot of salaried employees didn't actually notice there was an issue because the first page is your income, second page is deductions. What was happening is the last page of your tax return was going through blank.
Okay.
And unfortunately, what's on the last page of the tax return? Deductions. So people were getting back refunds. And the layman, when he gets a refund, if he's getting R1,000 refund, he's happy because he doesn't have to pay SARS.
But that's the way it works. When we get money, we're happy. When we have to pay, then we question.
But what happens when he's supposed to have received a R5,000 refund instead of a R1,000 refund?
Okay. So that's where the expertise come in.
Correct.
Also, we were talking off air before we came into studio. You know, tax isn't something that happens once a year at an arbitrary time without any forewarning. It happens roughly about the same time every year, consistently, and it's the same rules that apply. They might be tweaked, they might change slightly. One thing that I've learned over the years is that you've got to treat your tax on a monthly basis if you're running a practice or running a business. And a simple thing like when you go to a restaurant and you've entertained or you've bought equipment for the office, put that slip in a different pocket or put it in a place in your wallet or keep it invoice. It's so when you get into the office, you put it somewhere that at the end of every month it's tallied, it goes onto a spreadsheet under different columns, it's totaled up, and the total for the months are done. And those sheets, those slips are put away neatly. So when it comes to the end of the year, there's no panic. But you said to me one step further, that your tax should actually be pretty much done by December. And if I can just jump the gun here, the reason being is that if you, for example, owe the receiver money and there are expenses that you could legitimately incorporate into your business to reduce those, you've got 2 months to do that. Whereas if you wake up now, well, the horse is bolted. There's nothing you can do. All you can do is incorporate it into the next year going forward. But the bottom line is instead of you having enjoyed that money in one way or another in your business where you could have added value, you're paying it over to the receiver.
That's correct. You know, every one of us, when you go, you look at your bank account at least once a month because it's important to you. Why do people not do the same with their tax affairs? It's just as important because it has a financial impact on your livelihood. But yet people don't do it. They leave it until July. And that's the problem, is that, like you said, the horse is already bolted. There's a certain number of things you can do, certain number of calculations you can do, but you cannot impact on what's already gone.
100%. I saw that in stark realities. I went to see a client who's an accountant, and he said to me that they'd had a brilliant year, and at the end of February, he paid out significant bonuses to all the ladies and people who work for him, a lot of ladies who work for him. He paid out big bonuses because he said to them, look, either I pay it over to the receiver, or you can partake in the profits and benefit from the hard work that you've done. And I said to him, but how did you know you hadn't done your tax calculation? He says, what do you mean? Our tax calculation is done monthly. We know where we stand at any given time. It might sound anal and it might sound pedantic, but what it does is it takes the guesswork out of it. When I did the promo for the show on the CU this afternoon on my way home, Justin Joffe said to me something about gambling or a lottery. And I said, yes, all tax can be like that if you treat it like that. We simply put the money in the slot and pull the lever and look the other way. And then when the music quiets down, you look up and you see what this says on the screen. Whereas if you can predict the outcome by being proactive, you can now stress. If you know you have to pay, well, then you have to pay. But at least you've taken the stress and the guesswork out of it.
Definitely. You know, it should never be a gamble. And like they say, the favorite saying is there's only two things that are certain in life, and that is death and taxes.
Correct.
With the lottery, you never know whether you're going to win it. The taxes, you know you're going to have to pay. You know, it's your debt to the state for providing certain services for you, to you. And you know you're going to have to pay that. It's just to get that amount minimized. And the key is information. We live in an information age. There's no excuse nowadays to not know what your tax position is, like I said, by December. And at least if you know roughly where your margins are and what profits you potentially have, you can do something to adjust that and to make it that you're spending money in the right place.
You know, I forgot to mention that Sean Fleischig, your company is called Atom Consulting. Again, Sean has been my personal tax practitioner and tax practitioner of many, many of my clients, big and small, for many, many years. It's a service that has stood me in great stead. It's one thing that I don't worry about. I don't worry about PAYE, UIF, staff salary slips, their taxes, all that gets done. I don't think I'm paying nothing for it. It's definitely a fee that I need to pay. But as we were discussing before, you know, if you start quibbling too much about fees, you actually lose focus as to what the service really is. So I would really advise everybody that when it comes to tax, don't leave it to the last moment. Find someone that you're comfortable to work with. Find someone who's approachable and who can add value to your business, and stop treating it like it's some sort of illness. You're going to deal with it up front, grapple with it on an ongoing basis. And Sean, like you said, just like your budget and your bank accounts should be done on a monthly basis, so too should be your tax. Before we go, and for the break, I just want to touch on one thing very clearly, and this has been a source of distress for a lot of people, and that's the logbook. Up until about 2-3 years ago, so long as you had a logbook with all your petrol slips neatly inside it, where you had your opening balance at the beginning of March and your end balance at the end of February, and you'd written down everything, and you could tell the receiver that my car is for business and my wife's car is for pleasure, and you were happy to use 80% of your fuel spend, you got away with it. Today it doesn't work that way. What do people need to do these days?
Basically, there are a number of tracking companies that will offer you an electronic format of logbook, but if you just want to keep it to the basics, keep a little A5 book in your car with some predefined columns in it, and just write down every single trip you make, and at the end of the year, it's already done. End of the tax year, it's already done. You've got all your detail. Because SARS, like you said, in the previous tax years, they worked on deemed travel.
Correct.
They could deem a percentage or a number of kilometers was deemed to be personal and the rest was deemed to be business. That SARS, as of 2 years ago, said no longer. If you want to claim any travel expenses on a travel allowance, or for that matter, if you're a commission earner and you want to travel, claim business expenses or business travel expenses, you need to furnish a logbook. And every single one of our clients that has that has a travel allowance or has wanted to claim travel, SARS has requested the logbook.
Yes, we know. And I must say, it was quite simple for me to do because I actually kept a proper logbook. So it's just a matter of transferring it. But there is a bit of guesswork if you're not putting your opening and closing on a daily basis. Life's hectic. We're busy. I once worked out that to get into the car, the amount of things that you needed to do between putting your seatbelt on, starting the car, locking the car, putting your cell phone earpiece in, turning on the radio. There's a whole routine to go. And now you've got to start worrying about opening and closing balance when you're late for an appointment. So the easiest way to go then would just be electronic. We've just got a USB, simply put it in, and it keeps track of it for you. Sean, let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk something slightly different. Welcome back to the Personal Finance Show. My name is Avi Kay. I'll be your host. I suppose going forward, it's my first show. I shared it with Liron. Liron finished off today, and it's a wonderful honor to be with you and to be entrusted with the responsibility of sitting here and discussing personal finance. We've just been discussing personal finance with tax with Sean Flaschek of Atom Consulting. You can look up atomconsulting.co.za and visit him. Again, I recommend him strongly. It's someone that I've used for many, many years. But what I'm going to do now is something slightly different to, I suppose, normal financial planning. And that's maybe as a financial planner, I have differentiated myself. Not everything is about policies. It's about lifestyle. It's about the individual. It's about looking at things holistically. I happened to be chatting to a client the other day whose son had a bar mitzvah, and my son had a bar mitzvah nearly a year ago, and my wife really handled most of the expenses and what went into it and what is entailed, and I don't think I really had my finger on the pulse as to the total tally at the bottom of the page, where she did. And when I was just speaking to this client of mine, and she said to me her bar mitzvah came to close to 100,000 rand, I nearly, I sucked in and I said, how did you get to that? And there came up a very neat and tidy spreadsheet, and every single item was accounted for. It wasn't just the function. It wasn't just the photographer. It was everything that went into making this function what it was. So what I'm going to be doing over the next couple of weeks is we're going to start with bar mitzvahs, and we're going to look at the costs of a bar mitzvah. Not that you should freak out about it, but rather that those of you who are starting families or have younger kids are able then to sit down together with a person like myself and say, I've got a bar mitzvah coming up in 10 years or in 5 years, which might be a bit late, and say, what do I need to put away? How do I budget for this? So I did a bit of research for you today. I called the Kollel Bookshop, and let's start with tefillin. A pair of tefillin for a bar mitzvah boy starts from about 3,600 rand. And the reason I called the Kollel Bookshop is that it's an established bookshop, been around for a long time, and I don't think you'll buy substandard quality over there. So if they give you a pair of tefillin for 3,600 rand, I reckon that's a decent pair of tefillin. There are many Sofrim in town, there are other bookshops, and I reckon everybody's on the level. So let's look at 3,600 rand, but you can go up to 10,000 rand for a pair of tefillin. If your bar mitzvah boy is going to wear a talis starts around about 1,000 rand. So you're at 4.5, let's call it 5,000 rand with the talis bags and all that for a level entry or a basic set of talis and tefillin for a bar mitzvah boy. Once that's done, you now have to start looking at the other things that come together with it. Your talis and tefillin, or your tefillin specifically, remember, you don't need to buy 2 months before your son has his bar mitzvah. You can buy it 4 years. Or you can get family who wants to buy it, they can buy it. It doesn't age, it doesn't depreciate, it keeps its value, it keeps its holiness, it keeps its importance. And if you buy it early, you can have it and you can put it out of mind from the financial planning point of view, and you can just get it and put it aside. So 5,000 rand is what it's going to cost for the bare necessities for a bar mitzvah boy. He doesn't have to have a function. He has to have aliyah at the Torah, and he has to have a tefillin. So the aliyah at the Torah, well, I think we can discount, but the tefillin is going to cost you 5,000 rand. If you want to start saving that from day one, then we are lucky enough to have time on our side, and we can start incorporating the time value of money and the growth of your money, and you can put in smaller amounts and allow that to grow as time goes by. But if you're starting very late, let's say you're starting a year, 2, 3 years before, you can strip any growth that you're going to get out of that money out of the equation. View it as a bonus. Simply say, if I need to save 5,000 rand over a year, I need to put away 500 or 450 rand a month. If I earn a bit of interest on that, great. But don't look at the interest or the growth on your money as being able to make up the shortcomings of having waited so late. You simply need to just work on the capital amount and divide that by the amount of months and put the money away. Sean, in a nutshell, what I'm saying is if you start early, you've got compound interest on your side and it makes it a lot easier. And to end off maybe on a slightly pessimistic note, is what I'm seeing these days is that the cost of living in South Africa is severe. I'm not saying it's easier anywhere else in the world, but people just don't have the ability to save. We get lambasted as a South African society that we're not a saving society.
Correct. And if you put smaller amounts, it just makes that when that big amount comes looming on the horizon, you know you've got it in the bank, and it just that peace of mind.
And the last ingredient that is almost the most important ingredient in the whole financial planning recipe is human behavior. I'm a firm believer in unit trusts, but they have one major flaw. They're accessible at any time. And when you come back from holiday in December and you realize that you haven't got school fees for January or you haven't got money to buy uniforms and books, there's that pot of gold sitting there, and you're going to go and start accessing it. And once you crack it, it's going to continue to hemorrhage. And therefore, I do believe that you should use a more fixed vehicle, like an endowment, for that long-term investment. You can open-end it once it reaches maturity over 5 or 10 years, and use something that you cannot access all the time. Because an endowment, once you've abused it twice, it's just got a self-locking mechanism, and you cannot touch the remainder of the money there until it matures. So, in a nutshell, if you go to my Facebook page, IVKSA, I will start putting up a bar mitzvah guide, and we'll start looking at the costs. And what we'll do on an ongoing basis is we'll work out the calculations for you as to what you should be saving. Sean, from a tax point of view, what's your last word of wisdom in about 45 seconds?
Just quickly, more briefly, make sure you've got all your documents together. Keep them in one pile and give them to your tax consultant ahead of the deadline season. You know, please don't drop it at your tax consultant. The tax returns are due on the 27th of September this year. If you're a manual filer, if you're an e-filer, 22nd of November, give it to them in October.
But 24 hours should be enough.
If you want a quick calculation, you get a quick calculation. Don't expect it to be wonderful.
Fantastic. It's been wonderful being here. I'm looking very forward to spending the next couple of months with you. Please be in touch with me. My email is avik@chaifm. My Facebook page is avikSA. My Twitter handle is also is avikSA. Be in touch with me. Let me know what you want. I'd be more than happy to help you on air. What I'd like to do is once a week to load a financial plan for somebody. You know, come through, give me your questions, give me your queries. You can stay anonymous, we can change your name, but we can deal with it on air so that everybody else can benefit from the financial plan that we're doing for you. Thank you very much. Good night at 7 o'clock, and we'll see you Thursday evening, 6 p.m.